This is On Point. I'm NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. Until the deadly attacks in New Zealand, I planned to talk this hour about a resurgence of anti-Semitism. Marchers in Charlottesville and Paris shouting anti-Jewish slogans. High schoolers in Southern California making Sieg Heil salutes. Nazi graffiti at a top Washington, D.C. private school. A massacre in Pittsburgh at a synagogue. Vitriol against Jews from the highest corridors of power in Hungary. Even the man arrested in the Christchurch mosque massacres left a manifesto that admits his hatred of Jews as part of a broader racism. So let's talk about the state of anti-Semitism and how to make sense of it. Join us. Have you witnessed anti-Semitism in your own daily life? How does it affect people around you? What questions do you have about how it's defined? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With us for the segment from Washington, D.C. is Deborah Lipstadt. She's professor of modern Jewish history and Holocaust studies at Emory University. Her newest book is Anti-Semitism Here and Now. I believe her to be the only tenured member of the Emory University faculty to be portrayed by Rachel Weiss on the big screen. Deborah, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, David. It's good to be with you even on this tragic day.
I agree on all counts. Deborah Lipstadt, you and I think, first talked a generation ago when there was this resurgence of Holocaust denial claims being made in advertisements taken out in campus newspapers across the country. Where would you say we stand now? What's different, if anything, about the state of anti-Semitism in the country at the moment?
I would say it's quite different. Holocaust denial, hardcore Holocaust denial, that kind that denies the facts, is weak. It's still around, but it's weaker than it was. But what we're seeing today is a resurgence of anti-Semitism coming from the right, as your previous segment showed. Though when we talk about white supremacists, certainly they hate anyone they consider to be a person of color. But they also hate Muslims. They hate Jews. They don't think Jews are white. They don't think Muslims are white, no matter where they come from. So we see it on the right. We see it enabled by some of the people mentioned in that previous segment, including the president, whether he believes it or not, Steve Bannon and those around them. And we see it on the left. We see it on the left, not in terms of violence so much, but often in connection with what is supposed to be criticism of Israeli policies, but often becomes anti-Semitism.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about that. That seems in some ways to cross the borders, right? That seems to, in some ways, be hitting here in the States, hitting abroad. Let's acknowledge this. Let's talk about this a little bit. I want to go to a clip in which we have a new congresswoman, Representative Ilhan Omar. She's come under fire for a string of recent comments that had been interpreted by many people as evoking anti-Semitic imagery. Here was an event at which she spoke in Washington, D.C. at the end of February.
I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it is okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country.
That was taken, as she said, to be make sure people could hear it. She wants to talk about political influence that says it's okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country, taken very directly about the support of lawmakers and others for the state of Israel. She had also talked about it being all about the Benjamins, that is, all about money. And there was some wrestling over whether how Democrats would deal with this. They passed a resolution in which they denounce anti-Semitism among many other forms of bigotry. President Trump was among those who said the Democrats' resolution fell short.
The Democrats have become an anti-Israel party. They've become an anti-Jewish party. And I thought that vote was a disgrace.
Now, it's worth noting, as you've said, Trump's own rhetoric and that of some of his allies have proven at times to be deeply problematic about Jews and about anti-Semitism. But do you agree that the remarks of the congresswoman were specifically a problem when it comes to anti-Semitism?
I do. Look, I want to make one thing particularly clear. They're criticizing Israel's policies, just like criticizing the policies of any country, including our own, are not anti-Semitic or anti the existence of that country. If you want to read criticism of Israeli policies, you can go to Haaretz.com. You can go to the floor of the Knesset, and you'll hear criticism of Israeli policies. Representative Omar, whether consciously or not, really was not criticizing Israeli policy. She was raising questions about those who support the state of Israel, those who have an affinity for the state of Israel, raising questions about their loyalty, raising questions about their allegiance. And the reason that that struck such a chord with so many people is that part of the panoply or the template of anti-Semitic charges, and every stereotype has its own template, but part of the one of the central elements of the template of anti-Semitic charges is that Jews are loyal to one another, but not to the nation in which they live. That they will work against the interests of the nation in which they live. They will work against the interests of the people around them if it's to their own interests and to Jewish interests. So when sometimes it's called cosmopolitanism, that they have connections across all borders. Sometimes it's called globalism. Sometimes it's called the international Jewish conspiracy. And again, whether consciously or not, she was playing into that rhetoric.
You've seen a bit of that across the Atlantic as well, where, you know, you would think that the Labour Party would be splitting apart over the question of Brexit, as it doesn't seem to have a clear stance on whether or not the British nation should be in Europe or not. It sort of seems to be temporizing at the moment as the Conservative government is falling apart. But actually, you've seen an incredible split over this very question. Eight members of Parliament have recently left the Labour Party in the UK. Those lawmakers did cite disagreements over Brexit, but also about concerns about tolerance for anti-Semitism within the ranks of party leaders as among their reasons for leaving. Last month, Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn, who himself has been accused at times of tolerating such things, insisted that he was tackling anti-Semitism.
It has no place whatsoever in our society or in any of our political parties. And my own political party takes the strongest action to deal with anti-Semitism wherever it rears its head.
Well, Deborah Lipstadt, you spent a bunch of time in Britain. You certainly have been involved in issues there affecting Jewish community. How fairly is he characterizing where the Labour Party stands, and to what degree is there a kind of tolerance in his party or more broadly for anti-Semitism in terms of the elite ranks?
Jeremy Corbyn and the people around him, there are many in the Labour Party who really disagree with him, but Jeremy Corbyn and the people closest to him and around him have rarely met an anti-Semite or a Holocaust denier with whom they've taken issue, unless it's an extremist like the guy in Pittsburgh, unless it's someone marching down the street in a neo-Nazi uniform with a crying the Sig Heil, or holding out their arm in the Sig Heil salute. He has been unrelenting in his welcoming of Holocaust deniers, of anti-Semites. And in fact, when he's criticized, he always turns the criticism on the person who was criticizing him and says, I couldn't possibly be an anti-Semite. Therefore, you must be making this up. His view of prejudice, and this is true of many people, not all, but many people on the progressive left, their view of prejudice is refracted through a prism. Remember, a prism bends light, and that prism has two facets, class and ethnicity. And they look at Jews and they see, well, these are white people, even though, as your previous segment and so much of what's been reported this morning and what I write about in the book shows, that people on the right don't think Jews are whites. You know, they think Jews are danger to whites because they're helping replace the whites in society. But for those on the left, Jews are white because they have a choice whether to identify as Jews or not. And they look at Jews and they see Jews as economically privileged, even though there are many Jews who are not. But that's their perception. So they say, well, then you couldn't possibly be a victim of prejudice. And I, Jeremy Corbyn or other people around me, I absorbed liberal values with my mother's milk. I could not possibly be a purveyor of prejudice. Ipso facto, therefore, if you couldn't be a victim and I couldn't be a purveyor, your charge of anti-Semitism against me must not be true and must have an ulterior motive. And often where they will go with that is automatically, you're just doing this somehow to support Israel. And this comes up even when Israel has no connection to the issue. There was a liberal democratic member of the House of Lords, a woman very much on the left, who the day of Pittsburgh, the bodies hadn't yet been taken out of the synagogue, tweeted, "This is terrible," I'm paraphrasing, "this is awful, but when will Benjamin Netanyahu learn that his policies bring no good?" Now, this had nothing to do with Israel. This had to do with refugees. This had to do with white supremacies. This had to do with replacement theory, etc. If she were alone, I would say that was one incident, but you see it repeatedly.
It's interesting you raised the question of Netanyahu and Israel in ways in which you're saying, look, it's also sometimes a non sequitur, but Netanyahu has of late palled around with European leaders who themselves seem to embrace far-right anti-Semitic figures. If Netanyahu can do that, how easy is it to get folks like Corbyn to respect a line?
Well, Corbyn claims that he's against anti-Semitism and really has a very poor track record to show for it.
Sure.
And the evidence is overwhelming. In terms of Netanyahu's, as you put it, palling around with some people on the right, Viktor Orban of Hungary, the Poles, the Austrian right-wing parties, etc., you're absolutely correct. To put myself in Netanyahu's shoes for just a moment, he sees himself as the leader of a country. He engages in realpolitik, and he says, "I can count on the votes of a Hungary and a Poland in the EU and in other settings much more reliably than I can on the Western Democrats. So I'm going to court them. I'm going to make common alliance with them." Now, if it were just realpolitik, that would be one thing. But there's another element here. That certainly Viktor Orban, with his campaign against George Soros, and agree or disagree with George Soros, that's immaterial. The campaign was anti-Semitic in both motif and intent. And the Hungarians know that. Soros was born in Hungary, raised in Hungary.
Survived the Holocaust.
Survived the Holocaust as a child. Even the people will say, "Oh, he was with the Nazis." He was 14 years old, so that's ridiculous. But the Poles attempt to change and modify the history of Poland's history and the Polish people's history in the Holocaust. Some of whom were rescuers and very righteous rescuers, but some of whom turn Jews over to the Nazis for a couple of zloty. They want to rewrite that with the law. And Netanyahu has embraced them. Now, you could say it's realpolitik, but the problem is that Netanyahu also proclaims that Israel is the standard bearer of the fight against anti-Semitism worldwide. Well, you can't have it both ways. So that makes me very sad. And it makes me very sad because, I think it's not a healthy way to go. It's not helpful to the fight against anti-Semitism, and it's a real moral conflict of values.
I want to take a quick call from Canton, Ohio. Zoe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I just wanted to talk about more so the anti-Semitism that is going on in the United States. I live in Ohio. It's a very conservative state. And I have had countless experiences dating back to grade school where parents would find out that we are Jewish and I would no longer be welcome at a house. I had a boyfriend's father who just he was very country, and he was so against the fact that I was Jewish, and he would love to tell me about it. I've had coworkers say things to me in the workplace. I think a big problem right now is with the hate in the current climate, thanks to thanks to our president. And in addition to that, the whole All Lives Matter movement, and it seems, in my experiences anyways, to have created this belief that Jews are just looking for attention. Jews don't have it bad. Anti-Semitism is on the news. We never see that here. And it really is everywhere.
Well, so we thank you for sharing your experience and your hard-earned thoughts on that. We have a couple of minutes left before the end of the hour. But Deborah Lipstadt, you write about this very question in your book called Anti-Semitism Here and Now. Talk to me about the ways in which Jews are the kinds of bigotry they experience are often dismissed or misunderstood.
Look, anti-Semitism would be quite different than racism. The racist looks at the person of color, the black person, the brown person, and says they are going to drag the white race down. The racist punches down, as many analysts have said. The anti-Semite punches up. They look at the Jew and they say, aha, wealthy, powerful, conniving, demonic. They are manipulating everything in this part of that replacement theory that you talked about in the previous segment. So they present differently. Justice Sonia Sotomayor referred in one of her decisions to the talk that every parent of a brown or black child, especially a young male, has. You know, when you see a policeman, if it's late at night, you don't run. You keep your hand. You take off your hoodie. You keep your hands out of your pocket. That's not the kind of danger Jews face. They face often what Zoe was describing there, or have faced what Zoe is describing, but they also face an existential threat. The Jews in Germany didn't look any different from the so-called Aryan, the non-Jews. Many of them were middle class and upper middle class, and yet they didn't end up in a good place. So it presents differently, but the hate is the same. White supremacy, anti-Semitism, they're all wrapped up. Islamophobia, they're all wrapped up together.
You've been hearing the voice and wisdom of Deborah Lipstadt. She's professor of modern Jewish history and Holocaust studies at Emory University and author of the new book, Anti-Semitism Here and Now. Deborah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, David.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Me, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.